They're like, you know what, we're going to create content. They do it for 1, 2, or 3 months, and then they say, well, where's the ROI? I was right. It's useless. Let's just go back to my business itself and skip LinkedIn. The reason that happens is because...
It's because, I mean, you can easily go down a rabbit hole where you've created a different ICP and you start attracting the wrong people. And these are the people that either don't have money to pay you or they're not your ideal customer. You don't have a proper solution for them. And then you're stuck in this... You're almost stuck in this no man's land because you've put out the wrong stuff. You've attracted the wrong people.
Time over there, like, what's the return on investment, right? Why wouldn't I rather spend that time on running the business itself? Which is a completely valid question and concern.
Before we start this podcast, I have one small favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so that we can help more people every week? Thank you. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Right Place podcast. My name is John, and today my guest is Khalib. Khalib is a specialist in helping founders activate their LinkedIn presence and build their personal brand on LinkedIn. Khalib, wonderful to chat to you today.
Yeah, likewise, John. Thank you for the kind intro. I'm really happy to be here, and yeah, looking forward to having a chat.
Great, Khalib. Let's dive right in. Khalib, you also often talk about common struggles business leaders face, like not knowing what to write on LinkedIn or not even wanting to justify the time spent on LinkedIn. Which of these challenges do you think is the most obviously difficult to overcome and why?
Yeah, that's a great question because founders in general, they are busy people, right? They don't have a lot of time. So if you tell them, hey, you need to get on LinkedIn and build your founder brand, they're like, do I really need to spend the time over there? Like, what's the return on investment, right? Why wouldn't I rather spend that time on running the business itself? Which is a completely valid question and concern. But the thing is, what founders usually do is they give it a shot, right? They're like, you know what, we're going to create content. They do it for 1, 2, or 3 months, and then they say, well, where's the ROI? I was right. It's useless. Let's just go back to my business itself and skip LinkedIn. The reason that happens is because you don't see ROI because you, number one, are impatient. Unfortunately, with organic content, you have to be a bit more patient as opposed to putting money into ads. Ads is very simple, paid social, right? You put in X amount of money, you expect Y amount of return, and usually you get that. Straightforward, everybody's happy. What's the ROI? This is the ROI. You know, everything's cool. With organic social, it's not like that. It's more like a patience game, and you have to build trust with people over time. You can't force your way into it. So founders, they start creating content, 2 to 3 months, it's not enough, and they're like, it's not working. This happens, as I mentioned, because number one, your expectations are not right from the beginning. Number two, which is very important, is they start posting, but there's no strategy behind it. They start posting because somebody told them once, hey, just start posting. It's not enough. With just start posting, you will start posting, but because your content is probably going to be scattered around, you'll talk about random topics, you don't know why you're creating content in the first place. Obviously, with 2 to 3 months, you're going to face content burnout, and you're going to say, I wish I never even started. It's useless. I'm going to put that time back into my business. So that is the major, major problem that people speak to me about in sales or discovery calls. Like, hey, we've been creating content for 2 to 3 months. There was no ROI, so we skipped. So in my opinion, that is the major problem. One, expectations. It's a long-term play. Two, you need to have a strategy and an end goal before you start creating content.
And Khalib, I mean, you make such a great point there. People almost expect instant results. But yeah. Is the only result in an increase in sales and revenue? Or what about using LinkedIn to connect with like-minded people? What about using LinkedIn to connect with potential partners, to people that can open doors of opportunity for you? I think if you're just looking at the dollar-based return, you might be a little bit short-sighted. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with that up to a certain extent, because what primarily matters when you start creating content on LinkedIn or building your founder brand is what your end goal is. Because for me, it might be generating business, which is revenue. For somebody else, it might be just building up their network, as you mentioned, right? Talking to partners, creating connections that you could leverage in the future. Maybe you're not looking for that dollar. You just want to build a strong network. So it all depends on what your end goal is. So if you ask yourself, what is the ROI that I'm expecting out of LinkedIn? Before that, ask yourself, what was my end goal in the beginning? Was it to create a community? If I am proceeding and building a community that I'm hitting that ROI? Was it to generate revenue? If you are getting some sort of traction and people are coming to you as leads, you're getting the ROI. Are you building a network, right? Are you building a network of like-minded professionals, or maybe you're trying to break into a new industry and you want to build that network? Are you building that? So, John, to answer your question, I wouldn't say it's short-sighted, but first you have to figure out what your end goal is. Once you figure that out, then you can judge whether the ROI was money, was it connections, was it network.
And in terms of building that end goal, you don't want to have necessarily multiple end goals, because then you're going to be a bit of a scattered approach. So you might just want to have one or maximum two end goals.
Yeah, because you raise a great point, right? It's going to be scattered. The reason is, if you have one end goal, then your content is going to reflect that end goal, right? That one thing. So chances are, yeah, the stuff that you're going to be talking about is going to be limited to that. So people are going to start to get to know you for that one particular topic, let's say. But if you have two, three, four, five end goals, right? I want to generate business. I want to build a community. I want to break into a new industry, everything all at once. So chances are, every single week, you're going to be talking about five different things. And when you do that, you know, if you try to become known for everything, you become known for nothing. So it's super important. If you have an end goal, right? Ideally, you want to keep it to one end goal. I want to generate leads for my business through my founder brand by building trust. As simple as that, right? Long-term play. Or I want to generate business for my leads, but at the same time, I want to create a network that I can potentially partner with these people in the future. So these are two end goals, but they're interlinked, right? You will talk about stuff that is relevant to both of these end goals. So to answer your question, have one or two end goals, but make sure these two end goals are interlinked. Because if my end goal is generating business, but then my other end goal is, starting another business. So if these two are not relevant, it's going to cause confusion to your audience.
Absolutely. I think it's important. If they are complementary to each other, then there'll be some synergy, because one person might be attracted to your A goal, and then they'll see your B goal as well and be like, hey, that's actually quite interesting. Let me find out a little bit more about that. But if people are coming to you for five different things, you're not going to actually know who to serve and how to serve them. And you're going to lose the audience. And you don't want to be, and you definitely don't want to lose the audience. I think it's important, if you want to be a key figure, a key authority figure, you want to be known for one thing. What are you known for? And why should I care about that? So focus on that.
Yeah, and to give you an example, I've been working with personal branding thought leadership agencies for the past 2.5-3 years, right? And then I started my business. Right now, I have two audiences. The first one is obviously founders. I want to help them build their founder brands on LinkedIn by leveraging their thought leadership. The second target audience is younger agencies, like the ones that I worked at before. They come into the market, but they're already big players when it comes to these agencies, right? They just want somebody a bit more experienced than they are to come help them set up their SOPs and show them how it needs to be done. So for me, those two are interlinked, because one, these agencies that I'm trying to help, they are also founder branding, personal branding agencies, but they need a bit of consultancy on how to run their business, because I've been there. The second audience, founders who want to build their founder brand. So there's an overlap. That is my end goal, right? Two end goals, but they're interlinked. So for me, that makes concentration that much easier.
No, that makes total sense. And I think that's how you also manage expectations. If you communicate that clearly to the people and say, look, this is the end game, this is the goal, and this is how we're going to get there, and this is also the timelines, and I think they can get on board with that. You haven't made a promise like you've seen somewhere on LinkedIn, oh, we'll get you 10,000 leads in 30 days and things like that. That's actually quite unrealistic, because, I mean, your inbox can be filled with 10,000 leads. It looks like 10,000 leads, but it's 10,000 people that are going to waste your time or that don't actually fit your niche or your product at all. So I think we should definitely be careful with people really over-promising and under-delivering.
Yeah, 100%. The problem is, people who do promise 30 leads in 1 week or 30 days, their goal when you start working with them isn't to generate business for your business or revenue. Their goal right from the start, and they make it clear to you, we are going to generate leads for you, but they never mention the quality of leads, whether they are going to be relevant to your business. All they care about for their business at the end of the day is, we want to get 30 people booked in with this person. We don't care if they're good or bad quality. So
Yes.
I've created a couple of posts about this as well for this recently, that specifically in 2025, right? We've been in this person branding agency space for a while now. If you're trying to work with somebody and if they say, we are going to promise you 30 leads in X days, that's cool, but you have to understand that their goal is to only book those 30 leads and that's it. They're not responsible for the quality. They're not responsible whether they close or not. I see a lot of posts on LinkedIn and they say, hey, we've generated 1,000 leads in the past 60 days. This is our framework and please comment XYZ so I can send it over to you. They're promising leads and it's just very superficial in my opinion. So if you're trying to work with somebody like that, make sure you vet them first and you have some realistic expectations right from the start.
No, that's excellent, Khalib. And I mean, I was really fascinated by your post, which is kind of the heart of our chat today, where you said there is a process to take to go from nothing, literally from nothing, from scratch, and spend 3 months on LinkedIn and actually build out your personal brand, build out who you are on social media. And in month one, you said you should focus on brand awareness. And brand awareness in terms of top of funnel and mid funnel content. So just explain that a little bit more. What are the most effective types of top of funnel content that founders or business leaders can post? And then in terms of the personal branding, is it the personal brand or is it the company brand or a bit of a mix?
Yeah, of course. Good. Sorry, I'm coughing a bit today. I don't know why. But let's break it down. The reason I believe if somebody's starting from zero or scratch or they haven't had any activity in the past 3 to 6 months at least, if they start suddenly talking about a very specific niche framework, let's say, and we know that they haven't been active on LinkedIn, the LinkedIn algorithm has basically put them in the back of the cabinet because they haven't been active, and then suddenly start talking about something very specific. Chances are their current connections or followers, they aren't even relevant to that specific topic. Even if they are relevant, since there was no traction on your account, chances are your topic is going to go into oblivion. Nobody's going to read it. And then you're going to feel like maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe LinkedIn's not the platform for me. And you will eventually quit, right? So in order to avoid that, I always say if you have been active, in the first month, just try to get some traction on your account. And by traction, I don't mean talk about random top of the funnel topics like leadership or XYZ. If that is your thing, then that's fine. But what a lot of people do is they talk about leadership because a lot of people resonate with it and they get a lot of numbers, reactions, this and that. So they get that dopamine hit, right? But likes ain't cash. I don't know who said this, but that was very specific. Likes ain't cash. If you want to actually leverage LinkedIn, first month, if you're not active, start by talking about top of the funnel topics and a bit of middle of the funnel. By top of the funnel, John, I mean stuff that is relevant to your founder brand and story, right? How did you become a founder? What inspired you? If you've started a business, why did you start it in the first place? One, yes, you want to help people out with something, but what was your personal reason behind it? For example, I started my business called Bari. It was named after my late father. And I started it because I wanted financial and freedom with time. Right, both of these things I wanted to handle those, so I knew that if I went solo, that is the only way I could truly achieve it. So that is my why behind my business, right? But then you go to the other why, which is okay, why do you want to help these people out? It's because I've worked with these agencies in the past 3 years, I've known what works and what doesn't work, I know how the algorithm works. So that is why I want to help you do it because there's such a massive opportunity out there, and you're probably sleeping on it, or you've given it a shot in the past and you've quit because you thought the platform isn't for you. So it's super important to raise that brand awareness, right? And by talking about your story as a founder, as a human, people are naturally going to find relatability to you. A lot of the times people say, well, top of the funnel means personal content. And I don't want to talk about my family or my children, which is completely fine. And this is a misconception. Personal is automatically being equated to intimate details of your life. That's not the case. In my opinion, the definition of personal content simply is content that makes you relatable to the other person. So if I've started my business because I wanted freedom for my family or financial freedom, chances are somebody who's reading my post probably started or want to start a business for those very reasons. So that instantly makes some sort of relatability. With that, what happens is you build trust. With trust, you get these people who regularly engage with your content. For example, John, you and I, right? We've been connected a while. We talked about a few things. We eventually decided to do a podcast. We engage with our content every now and then. It's because we have that level of trust, right?
Mm.
So in the first month, that is absolutely vital, in my opinion. Talk about your founder story, the reasons behind your business, why do you want to help these people, and a bit of thought leadership about your industry in general. Don't teach people how to do XYZ in the first month, I would say, but just spread a bit of awareness, right? I would say, for example, it's important to build a founder brand in 2025 because XYZ, right? There was a report that said that 73% of people or B2B customers, they judge a company's quality based on the thought leadership that they put out, not traditional marketing materials. So stuff like that spreads awareness. People are like, you know what, maybe I should do this. So in the first month, trust is absolutely vital. To build trust and to get the LinkedIn algorithm to push your content a bit, you have to get a bit of traction in the beginning. So if you're starting out in the first month, talk about those kind of things. And then eventually you can dive into middle of the funnel and bottom of the funnel content later down the line.
Yes. And Khalib, in terms of the approach in the first month, am I including any call to actions or anything like that? Am I putting a little bit of a sales spin here and there, or should I just rather ignore that and just focus on the awareness and even just documenting my journey?
Yeah, that is an excellent point. In the first month, I wouldn't suggest putting any CDAs that ask people to do business with you, like get on a call with me, this and that. But your profile in general, when somebody clicks on your profile and that first page they see, your banner, your profile, your tagline, your feature section, that needs to be optimized enough so that even if you're not pushing people to do it, if somebody is genuinely interested, they could easily go to your profile, book an appointment through your feature section or that custom CDA button on top of your bottom of your name. You need to give them that opportunity to optimize your profile. But in terms of content, I wouldn't put any CDAs right at the beginning, because nobody trusts you. Nobody knows what you do or what you're an expert in. Those kind of things take time, right?
Yes.
So don't put CDAs, but make sure your profile is optimized enough. If somebody wants to do it off of their own free will, they could easily do it.
Okay. No, that's great advice there. And Khalib, you recently had Alex Boyd on your podcast, The Founder's Law, and you asked him where should people start with content. And the word that he used is documentary. And I really liked that answer, which in my mind is record and write about what you do on a daily basis. It might be your daily routine. It might be what your team is up to. It might be how you're building your project and things like that. And I think this really shows people who you are as a person, as a business leader, as a founder. Also shows a bit of insight into your team. And like you said, it's not too personal. You're not really giving any of your intellectual property away. But I think it could be a fun and engaging place for people to get to know you before they even reach out or before you've even tried to sell them something.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I had a great chat with Alex on the podcast episode. And this thing called document your journey, I think it's so important, especially for people just starting out. Because number one, it's a great way to never run out of content ideas. Because if you're documenting your journey, for example, John, what I do in my content is if I onboard a new client, I just document that process of how I onboarded them and I put it out on LinkedIn. As simple as that. For me, yes. I don't have to sit down every single day and think, oh, what do I talk about today? Maybe that, maybe this pain point, maybe that. If I'm documenting my journey, I just have to talk about what I did yesterday. As simple as that. Right? So that is why it's so important. And a lot of people, it's hard, John, to start creating content on LinkedIn. I'm not going to lie. Not everybody's an extrovert or not everybody's comfortable putting out content. But if you're documenting your journey, that sort of solves that thing. It puts minimum pressure on you. All you have to do, and I tell people that even if you post like once or twice a week, that is completely fine. But just put something out that you've done recently, right? If you've maybe even read a new book that is relevant to what you do, maybe there's a new sales book, or maybe as a founder, you read about another founder, you want to talk about that, what were your thoughts? The most important thing when it comes to documenting your journey is to put your thought leadership out about whatever topic that you want to talk about while you're documenting your journey. So make sure you don't fabricate. Obviously, these are obvious, but we still see it on LinkedIn, right? People fabricate, or you see a post and then you suddenly realize that, wait, I've seen 5 people say the exact same thing in the past day. It's because it's easy, right? It's copy paste, but the problem is it diminishes your credibility so much. If I see you've copied something from somebody, I'm like, it's a red flag. I don't know if I should be taking information from you, right? So documenting your journey, your day to day, that is a fantastic way to never run out of content and give people a peek into your life as it is. For Alex, I really like his content because it feels like he's having a conversation with me.
Yes. So
with that sort of a tone and that transparency, again, you don't have to put all your IP out there, but even just a bit of a behind the scenes, I think that is a great way to create content.
Okay, excellent. No, that's really good advice. And the thing is, you're already doing this stuff and documenting and posting on LinkedIn. I've often told people it's almost like my journal. If you want to know what John was thinking about, just go and look at my LinkedIn. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
That's what popped up in my mind. That's what I saw. That's what I experienced at an event. That's what I learned from someone. That's a quote that I saw or a book that I read. And that's how people can relate to you, because you'll be surprised. I mean, people, they click on your link and they'll scroll through your hundreds and hundreds of posts and they'll find some that resonates with them. And you've even forgotten that you've written it. But because you've got that, people see, oh, this guy's or this person or this team is on a bit of a journey. And now in terms of positioning yourself in month one, which is quite critical, what should you be doing in terms of your competitors? Because unless you're super niche down, you've probably got some competitors out there. They might be way ahead in terms of their posting, how frequent they are on LinkedIn. You obviously want to try and stand out. You want to get a bit of traction going in terms of the algorithm. What should I and what shouldn't I be doing in terms of what my competitors are up to?
This is a bit of a hot take, you could say, but I don't do competitor analysis for my clients. I don't. Because if I subconsciously, I might try to start playing catch up with them if I'm taking a look at them first. I'm like, oh, this XYZ creator is doing this so good. Let me just try to do the same for my client. Maybe they'll be great. Looking at your competitors is great. But I think it was Chris Walker who said this, but they don't really play catch up with competitors. They try to do their own thing at all times. He runs a very big marketing firm in the US, but for me, it's the same. I don't do competitor analysis. I know what the algorithm is doing these days. I know what people are doing in general, so that I know that what's happening in the moment, right? I use that information to craft my client's strategies. Because if I take a look at clients and I do like severe audits, then I will be playing catch up. It's just, I think, human nature. If somebody's doing something really good, you're like, that's working. I want to do that. Which is fine, but I don't personally do it because I want to create strategies from scratch. So coming back to your question, doing a competitor analysis of what you're doing, I don't do it. But if you're trying to look at other people who inspire you that, hey, I want to go there, or maybe even a competitor who's doing really good, don't try to copy what they're doing. Because if you really look closely, you'll realize that the reason why everything's working is, number one, they either have really good credibility, they've already done some good things in the past. So when they talk about them, people naturally resonate and listen to them, right? That's number one. The second thing is they've probably been doing it for a very long time. So if you compare your stage one to somebody's stage 50, you will always fall short. And then the time that it took them to reach that stage was, let's say, 2 years. You're going to be expecting that within 2 months. So who's losing here? You're the only person who's going to be losing, right? Because it's very easy to look at others and be like, they're doing such a great job. Why can't I do this? Why can't my founder brand do this? Or I've hired this XYZ person. I've hired Ghalib. And why can't he do the same for me within 3 months? I don't like this. Let's cancel the arrangement. Look at others only to get a bit of inspiration. But please remember that they probably have more credibility, or even if they don't have more credibility, they have been at this LinkedIn thing for quite longer than you are.
No, that's excellent advice there. I think you can really get caught up trying to keep up with the Joneses, trying to copy paste, trying to just take all of their stuff and trying to kind of make it your own instead of just telling your story. Because I think that's where their authenticity comes through as well. Because people will see, people will figure it out eventually that, look, you've been inauthentic, you're copying and pasting, or you're just chasing trends, you're just trying to look cool. I think that's not the way to go about it. And you're going to waste a lot of time and effort and energy on doing things like
that. Yeah, 100%. People can smell it from a mile away, right? It's very easy, because even if they don't in the beginning, with time, I think being inauthentic whether on LinkedIn or not, or in life in general, it's not sustainable. How long will you keep doing it? Because it's mentally taxing. It's, I don't know, man. It's really taxing on you, right? Because you know that what you're doing right now, it's not genuine. And you have this fear that what if people figure out, and what if people see me as this imposter? Well, if you're being inauthentic, chances are they will.
Yeah. Right?
As simple as that. So
exactly.
It's something easy to do in the beginning, being inauthentic, copying from others. But you have to ask yourself whether it's sustainable or not. And a lot of times people say, what is your personal brand? And does it need to be different from your offline life or not? Your personal brand or your founder brand, it's only taking what you have offline and bringing it online. As simple as that. You don't have to fabricate a personality to be like, oh, this is my founder brand or personal brand. A lot of the times people, John, they are these toxically positive on LinkedIn, and they're like high-fiving everyone, and they're like, oh, great, I love this, amazing. And in real life, they're not like that. It's okay if you disagree with somebody. It's okay if you have a different point of view. Funnily enough, those are the things that actually make you stand out. If you have your own point of view and you disagree with somebody because you have a different point of view perspective, that is how you stand out. So yeah, that is how I would usually tackle that sort of thing.
No, that's excellent, Khalib. Thanks, man. So month two, so you go through month one, the brand awareness. Month two, you suggest niching down. Now, there's so much talk about niching down, and I think there's a bit of misconceptions about it as well. So you mentioned narrowing content to attract your ideal customer profile, your ICP, as people say. Yeah, yeah. How do business owners know when they've found the right niche for their brand?
If you've been running a business, right, it's been 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, but you've never posted on LinkedIn, it means that you already know who your ICP is. I assume if you're running your business for such a long time, you haven't been selling to everybody probably. You probably have an idea of who you're doing business with. If they are in the B2B space, your target audience, then it makes sense that those same people are going to be on LinkedIn as well. So when it comes to narrowing down your ICP, it's not like you create a new ICP or persona when you start creating content on LinkedIn. The people that you've already been working with, that is your ICP, right? So you just start creating content that speaks to their problems and pain points. So if your ICP is in real life, the work that you do with people, they know that time is a major constraint for them, and you maybe solve them that problem through your business, then talk about why time is such a major problem for these people. Talk about what it costs them. And I think it's a good place to mention here, when it comes to creating content for your ICP, I like to divide it in four layers, right? One, why does your ICP face this problem? Why does this occur in the first place? Like, what are the root causes? Maybe they're not aware of it. Three, what happens if you don't solve them? What is the hidden cost, right? Maybe they're, again, not aware of it. Lastly, how do you, as a service provider or a founder, solve this problem for your target audience? So in the first three layers, you don't talk about your solution. You're not selling anything to them, right? You're just making them aware of the problem, what it might be costing them, why is it occurring in the first place. So they're getting awareness, they're getting warmed up. But then lastly, once you show them how you solve them through your product or your solution by using case studies or testimonials or breakdowns of your processes, that is how people see, you know what, maybe this person, maybe John is the person that's going to solve that problem for us. So because you've been telling them that, you know, this is the issue, and then eventually. So coming back to your question, how do you narrow down your ICP? You don't create a new ICP when you start creating content on LinkedIn. Your ICP is the people that you've been working with through your business. You just start talking about their problems and how you solve them on LinkedIn. As simple as that.
Mm. No, that's excellent advice, because, I mean, you can easily go down a rabbit hole where you've created a different ICP and you start attracting the wrong people. And these are the people that either don't have money to pay you, or they're not your ideal customer. You don't have a proper solution for them. And then you're stuck in this, yeah. You're almost stuck in this no man's land, because you've put out the wrong stuff. You've attracted the wrong people. So I think it comes down to being authentic about your ICP. These are the people I want to work with. These are the people I want to talk to. And very important what you said, you understand their problem. And I think that's by building that awareness and investing in that niche. I understand your problem. This is how we help other people solve this similar problem. This is what we've done for customers in the past. Or this is a new solution we're working on. Yeah. Then you almost start talking their language. You start talking to their pain points. And that's when people see you as like an authority figure in that space.
Yeah, and there's another thing that's important to mention here. Founders, they if you've started the business and you're not like somebody who was brought in later on as a CEO, if you're the founder of the business, right? That's why we call it founder brand. You understand your ICP better than anybody in your organization. That is like that should be a fact, right? Because you founded the business. But at the same time, it's hard for some founders to bring out their genius and transform it into content. It's not easy. You might have all the solutions, all the problems. You might know everything about your target audience, but it's not, you just can't find it easy to bring that out into content. That's why you struggle with content creation, with ideation. Mm-hmm. I had a really good episode with Eli Rubel. He's an agency owner. He's a really great person. Episode is yet to release. He said the same thing. He said, I specifically hired somebody to bring or to, I don't know, how to pull that genius out of my head. He said, we sit down every single week for an hour or two. That person just asks me questions. And John, that is exactly what I do with my clients as well. I know my clients are experts in their fields. They know about the industry. They are thought leaders. They know how to solve their customers' problems, and they know everything about their customers' problems. When I sit down with them on content calls, I simply ask them questions. Hey, you mentioned XYZ in our kickoff call that your target audience faces this problem. Can you please tell me how that problem occurs in the first place for them and how can they actually avoid this down the line? So by giving them a bit of context with the question and sort of like guiding them through a small story, you ask them the right question. And through that right question, it makes it easy for them to answer. I always follow this structure, and I talked about this in a recent post. One, whenever I ask questions to these founders on content calls, I give them context first, and then I prompt them. So the context is, we've talked about this in the past, and you know that your target audience faces this problem. This is the context. So then the founder's thinking, yeah, we talked about this. I can recall the conversation, and yeah, my target audience does face this problem. Okay, so what next? And then I ask them, I'm like, why do you think this occurs in the first place? Is there a way that you can avoid this? And then the founder's like, I have the complete picture. I know why this occurs in the first place. I also know how this can be stopped. So then they gave me a properly detailed answer in depth. So it's one thing to have everything in your head, like as an expert, but it's another thing to bring it out. And that is one of the favorite parts of my job, actually. I love talking to these people and seeing them open up because I can see they're passionate about this. And then they can just tell me everything that they want.
Yeah. No, that's such good advice there. I think taking that time to extract that information, and you almost build up a database of knowledge. And I mean, like we've probably seen on all over LinkedIn, there's one idea can become 10 posts, and those 10 posts can become 10 videos, and the videos can become Twitter content or X content as well. So you don't necessarily need 5,000 ideas. You maybe just need 10 core ideas or 10 things that you stand for, 10 things that your business is about. And all of those can be a massive chapter full of content and full of useful information for your ICP, for your wider audience, for people that you want to attract, partners, et cetera, et cetera. But you need to almost invest that time. I think oftentimes the founders, they want to do it, but they don't want to do it because it's going to take away. It's like, well, it's like a double-edged sword. If you do it, it might not work. But if you don't do it, it's definitely not going to work. So take that time. Say, we're going to do it over a couple of months. I'm going to sit with a person, or I'm going to write it down. Or often advice that I give to people is, if you haven't got time to write, send yourself a voice note. If you've got an idea, send yourself a WhatsApp voice note or a memo recording on your phone or something. Then at least you've captured that idea. Because you're often not in a position to write something down. So there are many ways to do it. It just that investing that little bit of time can go a long way.
Yeah, it's about commitment, right? And it's about discipline as well. If you really want to make something work, John, that applies to everything in life. If you really want to make something work, you have to stick to it. You have to put the reps in. Because you might have the biggest budget in the world. You might have the greatest ideas, but unless you actually sit down and do that thing for quite a while, you won't know whether you actually knew everything or not. So that's the only catch, right? If you want to do, let's say, this founder branding thing right, you have to commit to it. And that commitment is mostly your time. If you can take out a bit of time and properly dedicate it to this thing, founder branding thing, this can open so many doors for you, doors that you probably didn't even know existed. I've been talking to founders for the past few months, Some have raised millions of investments. Some have, you know, they've been thinking about. I recently had a chat with a founder based out of Denmark, I think. They raised millions recently for their AI startup. And now he's thinking about building his founder brand, right? He knows that it needs to be done. But he told me, I just feel like I don't know how to do it, right? So stuff like that, even if sometimes you have all the time in the world, you can dedicate the time, but you just don't know where to start or how to do it. That is why I always say it's so important to know how you want to be positioned. Like, what is the one thing that you want to be known for? What is the end goal of your LinkedIn presence? If you start creating random content, you'll probably stop. But if you have an end goal in mind and you start with a bit of strategy, like, hey, I'm going to create this kind of content, not an extensive positioning deck, but just a bit of strategy, with time, you will find your positioning. But the catch is you have to give it time. And once you do that, it gets easier with time.
Mm. No, excellent, Khalib. Now, Khalib, you've gone through month one, brand awareness. Month two, you've niched down. Month three, you say you must focus on meaningful conversations, which I think generally start in the DMs, in LinkedIn. So what's your advice for crafting these meaningful and especially non-salesy type DM conversations that will hopefully build trust?
Yeah. So this the premise or the foundation for this DM starts in month one. Because it's not like you start month three and then you randomly start texting people to start a conversation. In month one, what you do is when you're creating top of the funnel content awareness, at the same time, you also need to be adding relevant target audience into your network, sending them a connection request. Don't include the note. You don't have to. Send them a blank request. Chances are if you send 10, 5 of them will accept it. Okay. Once they accept it, you don't say anything. They're in your LinkedIn ecosystem now, as I like to call it. They're going to be looking over your content, probably checking out your profile. These people are mostly lurkers. They don't interact, but they keep an eye on you, right? And I think you and I both can relate. Sometimes we do that to other people as well, right? So they're going to lurk. Now, your job is to stay consistent with your content and your presence on LinkedIn. And when month two ends and month three starts, you know that I've had a few people in my network for the past 2 months. Simply send them a message saying, hey, John, we've been connected a while. Thought I'd drop by and say hi. That is it. You're not selling anything, but you're just politely introducing yourself. Now, if they have been lurkers or maybe they've engaged with your content a few times in the past, they're going to be open to that DM. They're going to see you as a human. There's going to be a tiny bit of trust because they've been consuming your content and not interacting. So when you send them a message, chances are they'll probably reply. And then you can take the conversation anywhere you want, depending on how you approach it. Still, you don't sell. I never sell in the first DM because I don't think it works that way. If you say, hey, I thought I'd drop by, say hi, and John says like, hey, hi to you as well. Hope you're doing good. And then you're like, hey, do you know what? I built founder brands. Come work with me. It doesn't work like that. So I've made that mistake so many times, John, by the way. I would add people. I would send them. You know, that's why I say putting the reps in are so important. I would get people into my network and I would immediately text them like, hey, what's up? Are you interested in building your founder brand? Because I was a new business owner. I'm still pretty new. It's been like, what, 5 or 6 months? So I'm still learning every single day. But the key is to get them into your network, let them nurture for a couple of months, and then send them a message. Just introduce yourself. With time, I say this, naturally the pathway opens. They either react to a post of yours that is relevant to your target audience and what you do, and then you can take the conversation into the DMs like, hey, I noticed you liked it. Was there anything particular you liked? And then you continue that conversation. Or with time, you just see their comment somewhere that is related to the service that you provide, and then you can take that into the DMs like, hey, I saw your comment there. Is there anything I can help with? So 2 months, 3 months, let them nurture and then send them a message simply introducing yourself. I think that is the right way to do it.
Look, I think that's excellent advice because I think, I don't know about you, but I'm getting random DMs every single day and it's just sales. There's no interest in who I am or my content or anything, just people trying to sell. It's a bit of a shotgun approach. It doesn't look good. I just end up blocking the people and you don't want to be one of those people. If you're going to play the long game, then play the long game. Build that relationship. Yeah. Touch base with the people. Like you say, engage with the people that engage with your content. And I mean, I really think that you then start attracting the right people. It almost becomes a bit of a filtering system that you end up connected to the right people, people that value you, people that you value, and people that you can hopefully find some synergy with. And it might not be a business relationship. It might just be you introduce them to the right person, or they introduce you to the right person that you can do business with. And I think that's the beauty of LinkedIn. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you must buy from my stuff, otherwise we can't be friends.
Yeah, and it's good that you mentioned this, because I usually do this. I have a podcast guest, we do the podcast, and then in the future another podcast guest comes along, and I feel like these two could be a good fit together, because one of the guests need this service and the other one provides it. So then I'm like, hey, I have this founder that I had on my podcast. I'd be interested in getting you guys intro so that you can maybe work something out. And then they're like, 99% of the time, they're like, yeah, sure, let's do it, right? So I introduce them, I leave the chat, and then they just up to them what they do it. Sometimes I like to do it like whenever there's a guest on my podcast, I tell them towards the end. They usually ask me like, what can I do for you? Is there anything I will help with? And I say, if you feel like there's somebody who's a good case study for a LinkedIn founder brand, could you intro me? And then that's how it usually happens, right? They intro me, and then we take that into a podcast. So it's super important. Sometimes it's not about making a hard sale, but having that connection or having that network built up, I think that is also very beneficial down the line in the long run.
Okay. No, that's excellent. That's really excellent advice. And I think you can, if you do that consistently, like you said earlier, that's where the magic happens. That consistency of applying that, keeping the bigger picture in mind. And not everyone that you meet and connect with is a customer, but they might be a very useful person to know further down the line. Now, Khalib, let's say you get to the end of the 3 months. You've done the brand awareness, the niching down. You've had very good conversations in the DMs and that. Yeah. What are some of the valuable metrics or KPIs for assessing my success at the end of my 3 month stint? What should I be looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to go back a tiny bit to month one KPIs, then month two, month three. So in the month one, in month one KPIs are mostly related to brand awareness, right? You want to build that brand awareness out there so that algorithm gets traction, people start getting to know you. What are the KPIs? These are probably going to be simple numbers. How many people are reacting to my post? Am I getting comments? You know, just to know that people are engaging. Those are the core KPIs in the beginning. You don't have to generate conversations. You don't have to do anything. But if you get any sort of DMs or comments that are good and you know that people are taking interest, numbers are gradually increasing by the week, then that means that you're working, everything's good, and then you can slowly move towards month two. Now, let's say month one is stellar. It's great. What do you do in month two? What do you measure? What are the KPIs? In month two, since we now are going to be doubling down on a bit of middle of the funnel plus a tiny bit of bottom of the funnel content, now I want these people who are engaging with my content or sending me DMs or leaving comments, I want them to be a bit more relevant to my ICP. So that is what I'm going to track. Who is looking at my profile? Like every time somebody looks at your profile, you get a notification, right? Like XYZ viewed your profile. Are these people, when I take a look at that section, relevant to my ICP? Or are they completely random? If they're completely random, chances are I'm not creating the right kind of content. So then I have to go back to the drawing board, and maybe I'm not talking about enough content that appeals to my target audience. Maybe I'm not talking about thought leadership that's related strictly to my industry. Or maybe there's not content that hints towards a problem that my ICP is facing. So I have to fix all of that and then start creating content based on that feedback as well. So once that takes 2, 3, 4 weeks, then I can move towards month three. Now in month three, assuming that one and month two are good, now I want to double down a bit more on target audiences, right? So now the KPIs that I'm tracking is when I'm sending those intro messages, since it's month three, when I'm sending those intro messages to my target audiences who I've added into my network, are they replying or not? The people that I'm adding into my network or I've added to my network, are they relevant to my ICP or not? The people who are reacting or engaging with my content or leaving comments or sending me DMs, are they more relevant to my ICP or not? It's with time, as you move towards month three, it's more about narrowing down on who engages with you or who you're in front of, or the people who are seeing your profile. Are they, the majority of them, are they relevant to my ICP or not? LinkedIn is a public platform, John. All kinds of people are going to interact with us. You can't stop them, right? You can't be like, oh, don't interact with me. You can't do that. But what you can do and what's in your control, it's just taking a look at, okay, so let's say 10 people viewed my profile. by month three, I would want like at least five of them to be relevant to my ICP, right? Then that's giving me signals that, you know what, in month one, I had one person who was relevant. Month two was like maybe two. Month three is like five. So that's progress. With time, I know it's a long-term play. This thing's going to increase because I'm going to become an authority. People are going to start looking at me as a thought leader. And, you know, it's going to be good. So those are the metrics that you track. Every single month that you proceed, you have to narrow down the metrics to your ICP. Engagement, is it relevant to ICP? Comments, ICP. Profile viewers, ICP. So metrics stay the same in general, but the way you look at them, it changes a tiny bit. And then after month three, it's more about just doubling down on what has worked. As simple as that. You don't have to reinvent the wheel because people are going to be facing the same problems, your target audience. They are going to be looking for similar solutions. Your business is probably not going to change. It's going to stay the same. So you can't be talking about a new thing every single week. What you have to do is by the time month three hits, you have a bit of feedback on what kind of content resonates with the people more, what kind of a format, maybe video, maybe image, maybe text, long, short. Take those signals. At least, ideally, you want to give yourself 6 months, ideally. But if you're short for time, you feel like, then at least give yourself 3 months to get that data. And then off the back of that, tailor your strategy, your outreach, your adding connections, everything. And then do it. Because in month one, it was brand awareness. Month two, it was a tiny shift towards middle of the funnel, bottom. Month three is mostly going to be middle of the funnel educational content plus bottom of the funnel, like case studies or processes. Because if we want our metrics to be more relevant to the ICP, then content needs to be relevant to the ICP more as well. So, you know, not a lot of top of the funnel, but like mostly education, middle of the funnel plus bottom of the funnel. So these are the metrics that you need to be looking at.
No, I think that's very important. And I think my key takeaway here is it's going to take time. And it's not just the posting. It's the post actually working. It's not just the ICP. Is the ICP engaging correctly? It's not just the DMs. It's also the follow-ups. It's also the adding value to other people's content as well. So there is a little bit of strategy in it. And I think if you define your strategy correctly up front, I think you can get a lot of success eventually. Just throwing anything at the wall and seeing what sticks is not going to work. You're going to frustrate yourself and you're going to say LinkedIn doesn't work. It definitely does work. There is very, very good people out there on LinkedIn that have invested the time and it's working for them. There isn't always a shortcut. Yes, you can learn a lot from people, but I think what you've broken down here is take 3 months. Don't say, look, it's going to be 2 weeks it's going to be fireworks. Be realistic. Take 3 months. Start now in January. It's a perfect time of the year to start. Yeah. Reflect on 2024. Document what you're building in 2025. Talk about your ICP. Talk about their problems. Talk about what's changed in your life. Things like that. And that is how you can build a foundation for this year, that when you get to November, December, you can look back and like, oh, it really worked because I allowed myself the time and I was realistic with my expectations. If you're going to be unrealistic, it's not going to work for you. So I really just encourage the listeners, just be realistic, give yourself the time and just do it. I mean, there are amazing founders that I follow and I read their stuff every single day or whenever they post because it's a journey, it's inspiring, or it's making me think about things differently. I might not necessarily be a client of theirs, but I appreciate their content because it's very helpful.
Yeah. And then you raise all like very good points, right? You have to give yourself the time and you have to commit to it with discipline. And then there's no way that it won't work because John, I'll give you a very simple example. If someone like me who belongs to a small city/village in Pakistan can make this LinkedIn thing work for him, then people who have much larger credibilities than me, they can definitely make this work. My credibility is that I worked with agencies in the past 3 years, three different agencies. The founders that I'm working with or I want to work with or probably are listening to this, but I haven't started LinkedIn, they've probably run their business for years, right? They have a lot of credibility. All they need to do is just get that out of your head onto content. That is it. If you can do it yourself, great. If you can't, hire somebody. But you have to put it out. And as you said, if you start today in January and then you reflect in December, let's say how 2025 went, you're going to be so thankful, because founders always say this, wait, well, let's wait till Q1 ends and then we can start. The problem is, as we mentioned, you need at least 3 months to get some sort of traction or momentum going, and then you can be like that. So if you start in February, you're going to wish you started in January. If you start in March, you're going to start in February, right? I like to say this, if you're not starting, you're only delaying the inevitable, because you probably know that you need it. You know that it's going to be good for business as well, but maybe you're making excuses. Maybe you don't know how to do it. The good thing is there's a solution for everything, all of your problems right now, whether it's time, whether it's the only thing is money. If you don't have it, that is a different case. But if you have the finances, everything else can be solved.
Yeah. No, 100%, Khalib. I think this has been very, very useful. And I just encourage, again, the listeners, just do it. Delaying the inevitable and trying to play catch up at a later stage where it's going to be more expensive, or you're overly desperate, or you want instant results, it's not going to be a good look. Invest the time now while you can. Start slowly and start with the basics. Get the basics in place and things will really fall into place. Khalib, I really appreciate your insights. It's been absolutely fascinating. Our last question for today is, what's on your radar for 2025 and your goals, and how will they help you find your right place?
So finding my right place. To summarize, finding my right place, John, would be, number one, by 2025, I would want to be financially stable, because I want to provide for my mother and my family, my wife and kid. That's number one. Second thing is, if I'm to be in the right place, that would be me working on my own terms, on my own time zones, right? I don't want to be very strictly when it comes to time, because that's the whole reason why I started this, right? I started my business because I wanted freedom in terms of time and money. So if I can achieve that is my right place. And that is how I would get there. If we're strictly talking about business, let's say professionally, my goal is, number one, I am going to introduce a video offer where, just like right now we are having this podcast, I have like client calls on Riverside as well. So I record them, we have everything, but I want to introduce the offer where I'm going to send my clients a good quality camera and a microphone. I'm going to buy it for them. I'm going to ship it to them, so that when the content that we create based on our content calls, we can record that and use that as video content as well. I'll do the editing and everything. That is one. Second, which is a long shot, is thought leadership ads on LinkedIn, because I think that is a great way to narrow down your ICP and who you want to show it to, your content. So that is a bit of a long stretch, but the video offer for 2025 professionally, that is definitely something I want to take on.
Okay. No, that sounds fascinating. I look forward to seeing your progress with that. Khalib, I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate your content. Ladies and gentlemen, please connect with Khalib Hassan. We'll put all of the links down below. Also check out his podcast, The Founder's Law, on YouTube. We've got a really great episode with Alex Boyd, which is up, which is really, really good. There's some other really cool episodes there as well. And really take what he said to heart. I really believe this is the year for you to climb on LinkedIn, give it a go. It's really a safe place. You've got nothing to worry about. And there's really cool people out there who will gladly help you and point you in the right direction. Khalib, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, John. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you next time at The Right Place.